Most firms survive, the best ones scale. Welcome to the Managing Partners Podcast, where law firm leaders learn to think bigger. I'm Kevin Daisy. Let's jump in. What is up, everyone? I got a special guest here for you today. A friend, a competitor, just someone that I've looked up to and who's just just a beast and the best in the space, in my opinion. Got Jason Hennessy here on the show. What's up, man?
I guess when you put those two words together, we're friendly competitors, right? There you go. See?
There you go. Right? Uh-huh. We can work together. There's plenty of business out there.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here. Thank you, Kevin. I'm a big fan of you. And, you know, there's so many good guys in the space, and your agency and you guys and what you do is certainly one of them.
I appreciate that. Yeah, there's a list that I have, and you're definitely on that list, of course. When I'm talking to folks or law firms, we might not be a fit, or there might be a conflict, or
it's always something,
whatever.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got to go to someone. Yeah. There's a short list I recommend them to.
100%.
Yeah. Well, good to have you on the show. Good to see you. I know you've had a lot of things going on. I want to catch up. You know, we have no agenda today on the show, but obviously for my lawyers listening, all the owners out there, me and Jason, you know, we're definitely one and the same as far as running and operating business and doing it with intention. And Jason's built an amazing business, systems and processes, good work product, all the way through soup to nuts, right? So that's what this podcast is all about. And Jason can obviously share a lot on the show and what he's done with his agency. And you can apply that to your law firms just the same.
Sure.
We're not here to talk about SEO and geek out on that necessarily, because we could definitely do that. But yeah, we'll talk about more about business. So Jason, just update us what you've been up to, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Yeah. So Kevin, thanks again. Honored to be here. Just a lot going on business-wise. My agency just celebrated 10 years. We got started in May of 2015. And then ironically, May of 2025 was when we strategically partnered, I guess, with a private equity group. And so Hennessy Digital, my agency, was acquired by Herringbone Digital. And so that does not mean that Jason Hennessy is going to go and live on an island and swim in cash, you know, nothing like that. Like, I am still the CEO of my company. I am on the board of Herringbone Digital. I'm a large investor of that new entity. And so I'm just super excited for what we're building in the future. And we can certainly talk about that journey. But the agency is doing very well. Probably work with about 150 law firms across the country. Probably have about 130 employees. Things are well.
That's awesome, man. Thank you for tuning into the show today. I have taken things to the next level, and I've started the Managing Partners Mastermind. We're a peer group of owners looking for connection, clarity, and growth strategies. So if you're looking to grow your law firm and not do it alone, please consider joining the group. Spots are limited, so I ask for anyone to reach out to me directly through LinkedIn, and we can set up a one-on-one call to make sure it's a fit. Now back to the show.
Awesome to get to see that happen, and honestly, you did it the right way. You know, obviously, you could exit different ways. You could just completely sell out. You could sell all your contracts and transfer to someone else. There's a lot of ways you can do it. That would not be at all productive or helpful to the clients that you have or to your your team, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So what Jason's done, you know, as much as I have explored PE and understanding things, and, you know, again, he's done it the right way. I've actually knew of the group that he's with, and we have contact with them for quite a while, actually, now. And so, he's made a good move, and he's still running things. He's still the head of things. You're still going to see Jason around, just like you see him on the show today. So, again, just kudos for doing it that way and thinking through it carefully. Because not all PE is created equal either.
It's not. It's one of those things that, you know, if and when you are looking to, whether it's raise capital, exit, bring on partners, right? You know, you have a lot of options in business, right? there's strategies for every one of those decisions. And you just kind of have to think about what it is that you're trying to do. And so for us, the partner that we were looking to bring on to help accelerate the growth with injection of capital, it had to be a good fit for my clients first. So that was point number one. Point number two would have been my team. And then the third would be for me, right? I mean, there was opportunities that could have been a lot richer for me, but would have been a disaster for clients or maybe not the best for staff. And so it had to check all three of those boxes, and this partnership did. And so we're now months into this and everything is smooth sailing. We're very excited with the team that we're working with now.
Yes, I've seen other situations more recently where it's like people get an email. Hey, you're now a Scorpion client. It's like everyone's jumping and calling me or you probably to say, I'm not doing that. So I think that's the wrong way to do it.
Yeah, it's just different, I guess, you know, but yeah, the way in which we did, I thought it just worked out well for all three of those list of items that we wanted to check off. So,
and, you know, again, back to why this show exists, it's not talking about marketing or nothing. This is law firm business, right? So every aspect of it. In order to appeal or be even to have that deal, right? You have to run a good business top to bottom. You have to have EBITDA. You have to have a good team. You have to have culture. You have to have process. You have to have sales, marketing, all of it. And do good work, product, and get results.
Yeah.
So yeah, it speaks volumes for what you've done there. And obviously, you know, I talked to a lot of folks that listen to the show that are just trying to start their law firm, or they're 2 years in, and there's just so much overwhelming to them that like they hear that they have to work on and fix and do well. And it can be overwhelming, I think, for a lot of folks, you know. So maybe tell me a little bit about like over the 10 years, like what were some maybe defining moments where you leveled up and you kind of saw now we gotta fix this, or we have to do this. Like, was there kind of major milestones there that were aha moments or?
Yeah, of course. You know, so when I started this, it was just me sitting in a coffee shop, you know, waiting for my son. We were in LA waiting for my son to finish acting classes. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to start another agency. And so that was kind of it, you know. And so I got one client, you know, then, you know, a couple months later, one client became three clients became five, right? It was more of a lifestyle business, right? I think most entrepreneurs or lawyers, when you start a business or a firm, that's just it. It's a lifestyle business. You do everything. And during those times, you've got really high margins, right? Because you don't have a lot of cost. You don't have a lot of expenses. I mean, in those times, you know, I would say you could be making 60% margins, right? You know, but you're doing everything, right? You don't have much time, you know, and as you get 5 to 7 clients and 7 to 10, there comes a point where you really need to like hire people. Otherwise, you just drive yourself insane and you get burnt out. Right. So, yep. And so, you know, from there, you know, you hire people that you can afford to hire. That's the key right there. And I think that's why a lot of businesses, small businesses fail, is because as you're growing, you have to hire people that you can afford. And those aren't always the people that are competent within the skill sets that you need. And so that's a big barrier to get through. You spend a lot of time micromanaging people. You spend a lot of time training people. You spend a lot of time retraining people because the people that you trained decided to leave somewhere else for more money, right? You know, and so it's just that balance that you have to go through. But once you break through that, you know, and you can free up some of your time, you know, then you focus on what it is that you are best at. And so for me, it was sales. I was pretty good at selling SEO. I sold mostly with passion and education and not so much high pressure sales or anything like that. And, you know, and then from there you start growing. And I think we got to about 3 million in top line revenue before I knew I needed to kind of treat it instead of a lifestyle business. I needed to kind of get more serious. And so that's when I brought in a COO and a CFO and eventually a CTO. And then we went from like 3 or 4 million to 8 million in 1 year, just wow. because we had the right team in place. Yeah.
I think one of the things you said there, I want to back up. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to a lawyer earlier today on a podcast that the same thing is, yeah, mm-hmm. when we're starting out, we don't have a lot of money and we're just starting to hire people. Look for the cheapest options possible. And that's based out of fear and out of money that you have. But that ends up really what held you back, right? And you're trying to find someone to help you level up, and they don't even know what they're doing. And you don't know what if they know what they're doing because you've never done that before.
Sure.
And so it's kind of a hard, easy place to get stuck.
It is. You
know?
Yeah.
And it can take years off your business, you know, just doing that. So
it does. And so right around like 5 million, that's when we knew, at least I knew that I didn't have the skill set to go from 5 million to 10 million. Like I was good at being an SEO, but I didn't have a lot of confidence in being a CEO. And so I brought in a business coach, a guy by the name of Cameron Harold, and he coached me and my CEO. He's still my coach today. And he helped us get from 5 million to 10 million, gave us some shortcuts and some cliff notes on, you know, things that we needed to fix. You know, one of the first things he asked me was, do you have an executive assistant? I said, no. He said, you are the executive assistant. He goes, don't call me back until you have an executive assistant, you know? And so that was a game changer for me. Got an executive assistant. She was able to take a lot of the tasks that I was doing, like booking my travel to this conference or, you know, answering and organizing my emails and all that stuff. And so I just became a lot more efficient. Then eventually we hired two salespeople to replace me in the sales role. And then my zone of genius was just being more of like the thought leader, the face of the company, you know, going out, speaking at conferences, doing a podcast, you know, writing a book, all that kind of stuff. And so since then, you know, we got to 10 million. And then we, as we went from 5 to 10, we really started to put in layered management, you know, hiring, you know, like VPs and director levels. And so there was a time where our margins went from 60% all the way down to 7%. But
fun
we
times.
Knew that, yeah, but we knew that that's what it was going to take in order to go from 10 to 20. And then believe it or not, I think going from 10 to 20 was a lot easier than going from 1 to 10. And so now we're, you know, on pace to probably do about 23, 24 million with about 7 million in EBITDA right now.
That's awesome. And that's huge. So, so much, if you're listening right now, I mean, there's so much in there where over that time and decisions that had to be made, I think, where you just know you have to level up, or the team you have in place, or the team you lack. When the thing is, you're adding all those C levels, they're just overhead. Most people would go, oh, that's just a bunch of overhead. No one's bringing in money. It's not salespeople, or in the case of law firms, it's not attorneys bringing in and billing hours. It's all this overhead that I have to bring on. And it's something that absolutely has to happen. But people can get stuck right there. Stuck at the 3 million, boom, boom, boom. We did that. We hit 2 million and just kept banging against it for a few years. And then, you know, you figure some shit out and say, what's broken? Also, you're bringing in Cameron. You know, I know of him. Bring in other people, experts, mentors, coaches. I mean, if you're not doing that, then you're just in a lonely place trying to figure it out yourself, right?
Yeah, that's a key, right? Because all throughout life, you have coaches, right? I mean, you go to Little League and you got a baseball coach. You play soccer, you got a soccer coach. You're in high school and you're doing bad in English, you get an English tutor, right? If you want to go to college, you get somebody to help you like study for the SAT, right? So you're always being coached, right? But then when you start a business, it's like, good luck, son, you're on your own. You know what I mean? Like, and so unless you're fortunate and you have like a father that was like an entrepreneur and you've watched him your whole life and, you know, you kind of get the benefit of getting coached by somebody like that. For me, that wasn't the case, right? So like I was just kind of figuring it out on my own. So Cameron was great to fill that void. And it's also good because it's nice to have somebody to hold you accountable. Usually when you are the CEO of a company, there's nobody holding you accountable. Everybody just kind of bows down to you and says, sure, sir, whatever you need.
Yeah. If you're they're a rainmaking owner lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. No one can touch you. You're doing it all yourself. But if you really want to grow your firm, right, you need to get out of your own way. You need to rely on other people, talk to other folks.
That's right.
Yeah. I love talking to like my law firm owner clients about their business or my business. And, you know, we help each other out too. It's just, there's just so much to learn out there, which is why I love this podcast too, because I get to talk to folks like yourself and other owners and just learn one-on-one. Yeah. And then I get content out of it too. So it's a win-win. So
for sure. Yeah.
It's awesome. So you get from 10 to 20, you're bringing on these other roles, these other, I guess, you know, your C-suite, if you will.
Yeah.
We are kind of in that right now, you know, just from like our perspective. And so we're going through some of those challenges that you've just gone through, and I'm excited to go through those. So I might be pinging you. I might be pinging you more often.
Of course. Yeah, I'm happy to help. One thing that I will say, which I think is important, is I think every business owner, CEO, law firm owner, I think everybody needs a no person in their life, because entrepreneurs tend to be a danger to themselves. And I'll explain. There's no shortage of new ideas that like most entrepreneurs don't come up with on a weekly basis. And it's very easy to lose focus on what you're trying to build if you are starting new businesses every 3 months or starting new projects every 3 months. You're just basically pulling budget where it could have been used elsewhere. And so I probably would have started 6 other companies if I didn't have a no person. And so my no person was always my COO, Scott Shrum, and he would very politely say, Jason, that is a great idea, just not right now. And then we would sideline that project and maybe we'd come back to it. Most of the time we didn't, but I think it's super important. If there's one lesson to be heard from this podcast is find yourself a no person.
That's a good tip right there. Yeah, it's, as entrepreneurs, you know, we get bored. We want to do things. We want to see new things. And honestly, as your business gets more boring and predictable and processed out, that's when you're making more money. But we get bored and we want to do other things. And we want to, like, I know you have like a dance, like a studio. And
I do, yeah.
There's other things that you're involved in. You know, me and my partner, we have 3 agencies technically. Mm-hmm. And I got real estate with my wife as a side thing to have something to do with her that's business related.
Sure.
But you got to keep it to a minimum, right? Because you can easily get distracted. And then you're just taking money out of one pocket, you know, put it into another. Don't mess with your main source of income.
That's right. Sam.
I'm sure you can get more creative now. You've taken some money off the table. We'll see all kinds of Hennessy businesses popping up.
Yeah, I'm kind of taking it easy. Like right now, my project is our house. Like we just moved to Nashville. We were living in LA. And so we're here now. And, you know, there's all these honeydew lists. And I'm not a good honeydew person. I hire. And so, we bring in like contractors to do this and electricians. And so there's just been so much going on at the house that I'll probably come up from air here in the next 30 days or so and get back to business, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, there's always that. And, you know, my wife, same place for now, she wants to do a ton of stuff to our house. And so I've always been like a handy woodworker. Like I have fun doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And my wife started to be like, we're hiring this, we're hiring that. I'm like, well, but I can do this part or fix this or do that. And she's like, no, you just need to focus on what you do. So, but I like that kind of stuff. So I kind of like, it gives me an outlet to do stuff or fix something or complete a project. I like doing that. But
yeah, you need that. You need that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But it makes no sense if you look at like, where's Kevin's time best spent or Jason's time?
That's right.
Like, is it mowing the lawn or is it Jason getting on a stage or, you know, doing his thing? So
that's right.
Yeah. I think you got to balance that out. Yeah.
My creative outlet at home is cooking. That's where I kind of get creative. Yeah. I like to cook, like to come up with recipes and stuff on my own and make nice dinners and stuff like that. But recently my wife has been on this, let's say the sponsor of this show, I guess, is HelloFresh, right? No, they haven't paid us any money. But my wife has been on this HelloFresh kick and it's really cool. They like deliver like a box of groceries. Have you done it? And then it comes with
the
ingredients.
The box.
Yeah. It's amazing. Awesome. Right. Maybe that's a new sponsor. We got to go reach out to them for you here.
Yes. I'll reach out to them. Actually, I'm going to bill them because we already mentioned them.
We already talked about it. Yes.
It's a really fun way to do like a dinner with your spouse or family. And they give you everything in one box. Yeah.
Yes. It's really cool.
So then you can just have fun making it versus having to go, what do I need?
Exactly.
In the grocery store.
I forgot this at the grocery store. I got to go run back. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. I would recommend that. But you know, like I now have lawn care. I don't do that anymore. I have a brand new John Deere tractor, and the same year decided I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm just going to have someone else do it for me.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, like like there's people like if you take like an Elon Musk or somebody like that, you know what I mean? Like it would cost them money for him to drive himself to work every day. You know what I mean? Like when you look at the time value of money,
for sure.
Like. So I think if you went and you optimized your time, there's an exercise that I did when I was hiring my executive assistant where you document like everything that you do for like 2 weeks, like every little thing. Like I checked email for like an hour. I took care of payroll. I booked my my travel for the conference that I'm speaking at, right? And once you do that, then you basically have a second line, right? And then you put like, is this something that you're competent at? Are you incompetent? Are you excellent? Or is it unique to just you, right? So like competent would be checking emails. I'm competent at that, right? That's fine. Doing payroll, I'm incompetent. Like I'm not an accounting person. I'm excellent at maybe doing a sales call and writing a chapter of my book is unique to me, right? So then you start to go through that list. Like how much would you pay somebody to check your email? $20 an hour. How much would you pay somebody to do payroll, $50 an hour? How much would you pay somebody to do a sales call? Right? I don't know, $100 an hour. How much would you pay somebody to write your book? Well, you can't, but my time is valued at $2,000 an hour, right? You go through this list and then you realize quickly that 60, 70% of the tasks that you're doing are probably $20 per hour tasks, right? And that gives you a good list of items that you should then try to delegate and find other people to do that so that I can spend most of my time doing what I feel is unique to me, right?
Where and I that $2,000 an hour work, right?
Yep.
Like you getting on a stage at a conference, that's $10,000 an hour.
Work, correct. Right?
Yeah. Can't put a mm-hmm. value. And that's an awesome exercise. I would encourage you. There's a book. I forgot what the book's called. It breaks down something similar like that.
I think it's Dan Martell has a book, Buy Back Your Time.
That's a great book.
That's a book, yeah. But there might be others too. Yeah.
There was one that was like a short one. I think I either listened to it or read it on a plane, but it broke down like $10 an hour work, $100 an hour work, also $1,000 an hour work, and $10,000 an hour work.
Interesting.
And it was a similar kind of exercise, but it was categorizing it all in that. And like, how can you do $10,000 an hour work once, 1 hour a week, right? $1,000 an hour work. How can you make sure that that's happening once a day?
Exactly.
So it was a similar process, but yeah, that's a great exercise. You'd be surprised what you'll find that you're doing that you should be doing.
You just start going through your day, right? Exactly. You don't realize it.
I also think it's easy to slide back in, even after you do that exercise, because I've done that. It's easy to, a month or two, 6 months, a year, redo that exercise and go, crap, I'm doing this stuff again.
Yep. I could totally see that for sure. Yeah.
Love it, man. That's awesome. Well, my business partner threw me a question for you. I told you I'd ask you. What was it?
Let's get into it.
He asked about NPS score.
Okay.
So what did he say? He said, how do you, we'll see. He texted it to me. Let me see. Ask Jason this.
Okay.
Requesting, collecting, and analyzing NPS scores. So for everyone listening, NPS score is Net Promoter Score. Lawyers out there, you know, we're talking about, you know, collecting reviews, Google reviews, manuals, experience. It's similar to that. So the NPS score, I guess, Jason, maybe you can explain it a little bit more, but
yeah,
I'd be interested to know how you're doing that and how it's been useful for your agency.
Yeah. So we do it. We have an employee Net Promoter Score and then we have a client Net Promoter Score because you want to be measuring, you know, how well your employees are and how happy they are too. Right. And so we usually do it once every 6 months, I think is how often we do it. And it's very simple. It's just a one question, that you send to your employees and your customers. Basically, it can say anything you want, I guess, but the best way to do it would be like, how likely would you feel recommending one of your friends or relatives to work at Hennessy Digital, right? And it's a 0 to 10. And then there's something called detractors. And then there's promoters, right? Depending on the score. And there's like an algorithm that goes to it. But, you know, hopefully you have a high score, right? You know, because that means that your employees are happy working there, right? And it'd be the same thing, you know, for the customers, like on a scale of 1 to 10. How likely are you to recommend Hennessy Digital to a colleague to use Hennessy Digital services, right? Something like that, right? And so if you do that twice a year, you have a score and then you can measure against it. Like, are we improving? Are we getting worse? You could ask a follow-up question if you like. So like if somebody gave you an 8, and it's anonymous, by the way, like you're not giving anybody's names or anything, but you know, if you scored below a 10, what could we do to get the score to a 10? right? And then you get real good feedback. Well, it'd be great if we can get pet insurance, you know, for, you know, like random stuff like that. You'll get all kinds of like ideas. And then from there, at the end of the year, once you're looking at budgets and trying to improve benefits and stuff, you take a lot of that feedback, you know, like we heard you, we listened to you, and we've made these improvements. Or we've heard our clients and you wanted us to give you more transparency. We're going to spend next year building out a platform so that you can log in any time to kind of get updates on your accounts. Like stuff like that. Like you really kind of listen to your clients. And that becomes an important metric that, you know, private equity would look at if they, you know, are potentially courting you to potentially buy you too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely can be applied with law firms. You know, I think everyone just thinks Google reviews so I can rank more and get more, but surveying your clients that way with those questions, and you can work it into along the process of a case or whatever, but valuable feedback to say, hey, how's our process, you know, or intake or follow-up or whatever, find where you're not performing well.
Yeah.
And with your staff, that's super important, right?
It's so simple. It's just one question, right? So like it's not going to take a lot of time for somebody to answer, and the feedback is very valuable.
Yeah, they don't have to have a Google account to log in. It's separate from that. You have to have review acquisition process for sure. But this is so I think you can just Google like Net Promoter Score. There's a couple websites out there that basically have the system. And isn't the scale like is it negative 100 to positive 100?
I don't think it's negative 100 or positive 100. I just know that like there's detractors. So like, you know, they will not count certain scores. You know, so like if somebody gives you a 10, because that's a promoter, that doesn't count within the algorithm. You know, it basically, like, I think what we aim for is a 70 is what our goals are. We try to get a 70 for both our employee as well as our client net promoter score. Sometimes we'll get like a 72. But, you know, I think large companies, I think if you Googled it, like, you know, large companies like Apple, Microsoft, places like that, I want to say like 60-something% is kind of the norm.
Yeah, that's a good place to be. Yeah. Yeah, there is a scale. I think I know there used to be like a site that would show some of the, you know, the major brands that you're familiar with. And then based on your industry, I think there's also a different like
that's true
benchmark.
Yep.
If you will.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yep.
Yeah. So law firms, if you're listening, you know, might have a different benchmark than 70 or 60 that Jason's going for. So
that's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah, cool stuff. Well, that's interesting. If you're not using Net Promoter Score, I would definitely look into it. Again, for internal feedback, client feedback, referral partners, you could use it for a few different areas, I believe. So cool stuff. Well, I'll tell Eric to watch this episode so he can learn what you're doing. Well, Jason, man, I appreciate you coming on to share where you're at, what you're doing. I know I'll be seeing you soon at some conferences, and you're still hitting the pavement, and you'll be out and about. So I'm excited to get to see you.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to leave anyone listening to that again, knows you in the industry? Anything you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of taking action. I always like to say, like, you have the power to create a future that wasn't going to exist. All you have to do is take action. All too often, people just don't take action. You know that you got to do something, but you just kind of delay it. You know, I try to wake up every morning and I say, what are the three biggest actions I could take today that are going to take me or my company to the next level? So wake up and go take action.
I love it, man. Power list. Get your power list together.
That's right.
Top three things. That's awesome.
That's
right. Well, Jason, man, I thank you so much for coming on and us able to, you know, share and promote each other and share the wealth, and plenty of law firms out there to help. And just exciting where things are going. A lot of new things happening out there with search and AI and all that good stuff. And
yeah,
you'll hear me and Jason talk about that plenty on social media.
We will have to geek out good about that. Yeah. So thanks so much, Kevin. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Yes, sir, man. I'll see you soon, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in as always. Get after it. Do those three things every day. We'll see you soon.